are you and what are you doing here?
Hi, everybody.
Well, what are we waiting for?
This is fantastic.
Hello, hello, hello.
This will only hurt for 22 minutes.
It's very early. I may have to hurt you. Call me in 5 minutes.
This is something that is treatable. This is something that is fixable.
Hey, this is not a test.
Oh, my God, it's early.
Your vote for. Welcome aboard the Amy Beth Arkley Show. Weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Yeah, it's another Tuesday, which means somebody's voting somewhere. Indiana is the new make or break. You think it's going to be a game changer? We'll talk about it. All the cacophony from the crazy political and pop culture sideshow, that's all coming up. Also, welcome back Kathryn Lee Scott, the actress and author. She has a brand new memoir out. Boy, this is a poignant, great read for anyone who is a caregiver or a patient. We'll talk about that in just a few moments. And by the way, how much do you think you should be compensated for if Starbucks puts too much ice in your iced coffee? I'm not kidding. Inspiration to action, challenge, success stories too. And you in the mix. Are you listening live? It is Tuesday, May 3rd. Yeah, we're turning another corner on the calendar. 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. You know by now, it's a 24/7 Twitter tango, so live or on podcast. Chime in anytime it works for you at AB Writes. And our social media maven, Aurora, tells us the Facebook page is open, too. So for the more loquacious among us who want to do their talking with their fingers, have at me. The show today brought to you in part by Progressive Insurance. Find out how bundling can save you a bundle at progressive.com. Also by Old Navy. Time to spruce up for spring with great style and savings at Old Navy. And by PopNet. Arts, culture, and conversation on air, online. PopNet features select editions of the Amy Beth Arkley Show. So let's welcome back Kathryn Lee Scott to the show. She is a renaissance woman, for sure, an actress, of course, most notably starred in the iconic gothic soap opera Dark Shadows, many other roles as well, and a very prolific writer, author of many articles and books. Last time she was here, we talked about her murder mysteries. Today, she's back with a very personal story. It's her latest, a memoir called Last Dance at the Savoy, Life, Love, and Caring for Someone with Progressive Supranuclear Palsy. Kathryn, a pleasure to welcome you back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Happy to have you here. And congratulations on this book. I know it was a very personal undertaking. Writing a memoir, writing anything is tough, of course, and personal, but something so personal story and going through so many challenges and sharing it with people took a lot of courage and I'm sure a lot of hard work and laughter and tears all going into it. So thank you so much for writing and sharing it with the world.
A lot of laughter, a lot of tears, and I am so glad I wrote this book. I didn't think that I was going to, Amy, but then about I realized that I had kept a journal throughout my husband's illness. And I, you know, if I'd had that journal to look at when my husband was first diagnosed, I would have been so far ahead of the game because I didn't even know what the disease was when he was diagnosed.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, here you were married for some time. It was a second marriage for both of you, married to journalist
Jeff Miller,
who was the founder of Los Angeles Magazine and a noted writer in his own right. He had just retired. Was he just retired? He was retired for a while when you started to notice certain symptoms?
He had just retired when the first symptoms started to appear. And believe me, it's not how he expected to be spending his retirement years. Yeah. But there were a lot of little indications that something was wrong neurologically and that he had to have some sort of a movement disorder because one of the hallmarks of progressive supranuclear palsy is falling backward, and he had a number of severe falls. And we always blamed it on something else, you know, a crack in the sidewalk or, a slippery floor. But then also he had difficulty reading. And another hallmark of PSP is an inability to shift the gaze up and down. So when we finally did find a neurologist who accurately identified the disease, it was actually a relief. We had no idea. We thought it was an inner ear problem, a brain tumor, of anything. But Amy, I should tell you, progressive supranuclear palsy is actually one of five of these movement disorder brain diseases. And the others also include Lewy body with dementia, which is what Robin Williams was diagnosed with. And then CBD.
Casey Kasem, we should say, the disc jockey, Casey Kasem, passed away from that as well.
Yeah. These are all sort of similar diseases, but they each have their own special symptoms.
And they're related to first you thought it might be Parkinson's. They're related to Parkinson's, but not quite Parkinson's. It's important to make the distinction, obviously, in terms of treatment, although you do point out there really is no specific treatment or cure for this at this point. A lot of research goes into it. Obviously, you have a forward by one of the doctors that helped
Jeff. Dr. Yvette Bordelon was one of Jeff's doctors at UCLA. And through her, Jeff also got involved in a couple of clinical trials, drug trials, and also an environmental study, because at this point there is no treatment or cure. And I think that by participating in these drug trials, Jeff felt relevant. He felt that there was some hope. And so I'm terribly grateful to her, and I'm very pleased that she was able to write the foreword to the book, because I have no medical background, and I think people who are newly diagnosed with the disease and dealing with the daily, day-to-day challenges need that very specific medical advice as much as they need my own, caregiving advice.
And this book does all of that. I mean, there's a resource guide, we should say, in the back of the book. But for those people who, it appeals to people beyond this particular illness, though, we should say, too, because it's really your story about the challenges that you faced and how you overcame them. So I think it's a gift to a lot of people who are going to be caregivers or patients, in the future. And, unfortunately, we're all going to be in that boat, one or both of those boats.
We are indeed. The book is called Last Dance at the Savoy because it was dancing at the Savoy that Jeff and I realized we wanted to spend the rest of our lives together. So the book certainly talks about our romance and the backstory of how we were together, and it was a great romance, and somehow we managed to keep the essence of that to the end. So I wish that I had just called the book Life, Love, and Caregiving, because I think it's as much about life and love as it is for caring for somebody.
Absolutely. And the story is such a rich one, we should say. I mean, you guys had a very, I don't know if I would say quite jets, but almost a jet-setting life. I mean, you had a house in California, you had an apartment in New York, a little house in London, you traveled a lot.
Well,
and even when he got sick, you kept traveling. I think one of his lines was, let's keep moving, which part of it was kind of bittersweet because it was sort of trying to outrun the disease or also just embracing, let's just do the best we can for as long as we can. Both of those, I guess.
Yes, one of the wonderful things is Jeff had a great spirit throughout this. I mean, he always said, no pain, no discomfort, it could be worse. And I think his attitude also was one of the reasons why caregiving, was a really loving experience for me. But I also, I know it sounds like we're jet setters, but these are the things we brought to the marriage. I'm an actress, and Jeff ran Los Angeles Magazine. But these were our golden years, and we really wanted to travel. We very often did, as I say, we reverted back to our hippie days, just going off to places that we really wanted to see. But I think for Jeff, just the fact that he was in motion, that he had something to look forward to, just made a huge difference.
That's such a great point. I think you're right, because even when you're ill, I mean, you want to have something to look forward to, and you want to keep going as best you can. There's so many poignant moments in the book. I think one of the most vulnerable was when he had a car accident, and he had his license suspended, and then he, talk about that, he actually had to go to court for it. I mean, it was kind of,
it was
emotional.
It was a terrible situation, because in fact, a jogger at a traffic light actually ran into his car. He was stationary, but it looked as if he had bumped into her. And somebody, of course, reported it. Jeff just wasn't even aware of it. And that was the problem, because I believe, Jeff's version, but I also knew that, as other people described him as being sort of befuddled. And when we went to court, I realized what everybody else was seeing, and he shouldn't have been driving. But when you're living with somebody on a day-to-day basis, you kind of pick up the slack and you don't really you don't really notice what other people are seeing. And it was a terrific wake-up call. The girl wasn't injured at all. And it was a misdemeanor, but it meant that Jeff had to do community service. And he worked at an HIV/AIDS place, which was a wonderful experience for him. But the point is, it took something like that for us to realize that he shouldn't be driving. And there were any number of other instances as well that made us realize that we were dealing with something very serious. And the other difficult thing is that these symptoms come and go. He, you know, his speech would be slurred for a little while, but then that would go away. And for a while, he wasn't falling, and then he would start falling a lot. So because there was no consistency, it was very hard to really detect the progression of the disease.
And of course, you want to overlook it. I mean, that's the human nature. You want to kind of live in a blissful state of denial for as long as you can, because who wants to acknowledge this? I mean, nobody does.
Oh,
so,
exactly. So one of the reasons why I put in that very large resource guide at the end is that during the years that I was caring for Jeff, there were so many handicap things that we installed in the house that I want other people to know about, and other little things that I learned that improved Jeff's quality of life. And I wish somebody had told me about them earlier on, or that I had discovered them earlier on. So in a way, the book is sort of paying it forward to the people who gave me a hand. There are just so many things emotionally also that one goes through. And one of them, Amy, is the role reversal that happens. You know, the big strong guy that always took care of you suddenly needs taking care of, or the woman who was always there fulfilling your needs now needs her needs taken care of. And it's very hard on a relationship. So I do discuss that, and the fact that a very good friend of mine whose husband had Parkinson's disease in a very advanced state called me up one day, and we were chatting, and she said, "I'll just pass along one piece of advice. Don't get angry with him. He can't help it." But the truth is, impatience and frustration and fatigue are all things that any caregiver is going to be dealing with.
So, yeah, you're very honest about that, where you talk about there are moments when you just get exasperated. And I think that's so great for a lot of people to realize that you're not alone in this. This is human.
Yeah.
This is natural. You obviously want to be as generous as you can, as kind as you can, but sometimes it's just so the frustrations overwhelm you, and you're honest about that. And I think that's also a gift to people.
That's right. Well, it is an isolating disease. As a matter of fact, most caregivers do find this, because when you're caregiving, it becomes a full-time job, and there's so many other things in your life that you have to put aside. And in my case, you know, going out on auditions and taking acting jobs became difficult as just disease progressed. So it is isolating for both the caregiver and, of course, the patient. Your world gets smaller. Fewer people come to visit. You're not able to get out and have a meal, or even in Jeff's case, it was difficult to get him to the park for a walk. So, yes, it is isolating, and there are ways to alleviate that, and that's something else that I discussed in Last Dance at the Savoy.
Yeah, so many great things in there. Also, you talk about how Jeff had kind of your perspective, too, because he nursed his first wife through multiple sclerosis for 12 years, so he kind of had the sense of what you were going through, right? I mean...
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, when Jeff was diagnosed, I think that he had a much better idea of the challenges we were going to face than I did, because his first wife, Barbara, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis just a matter of weeks after their wedding. And she never went into remission. She was she passed away 12 years after they married, and she was diagnosed. And we got together about 3 years after she passed away. It was the grief was still certainly with Jeff. It always is. You never really get over the passing of someone you love. But I think that he knew, and he just he just told me, go out and find out whatever you can, but don't tell me. I think bliss of denial is exactly what he wanted, but that doesn't mean that he didn't have a really good idea of what was down the road for us.
Well, it was a tough road, but one that you, as you said, you tried to, you know, retain as much normalcy as you could. You tried to retain the romance. I mean, you really tried to hang on to all of that as best you could, and I think that it comes through in the book. And as you said, you have some of your journal entries, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I always think journaling is a great thing for people and every writer, you know. Anyway, but certainly the fact that you did that, I'm sure. Well, you said you were doing it just for yourself at that time. You didn't necessarily think you're definitely going to write a book about it, or did you?
No, I mean, I am a writer, so I keep a journal anyway, but I certainly never thought, even after Jeff died, that I was going to write a book. It took me a good year before I realized what I had on my desktop, which was a template for a book, because it was one of Jeff's earliest doctors who said, you should keep track of all of the medications we prescribe because many of them are off-label. Since there is no treatment, we're going to be prescribing things for everything from Alzheimer's to restless leg syndrome, things Jeff does not have, in the hope that we might find an ingredient in one of those medications that would work for him. So he said, keep a record, a good one, so that you can see the progression and see if perhaps something works. Well, thanks to his advice, I kept a far more detailed journal than I would have otherwise. So there it was. I had the information, the sort of thing that people freshly diagnosed really want to have.
Yeah, it's great, great information and a great story. Yeah. But how hard was it for you to sit down and actually write it? Because you had to, I mean, again, I can see there's some great memories in there, but also some really tough ones. So it must have been an amalgam of emotions every day that you were writing this out.
Yes, I'm afraid so. I mean, I would sit at my desk writing, and all of a sudden I would just get a wave of emotion that, and just a flood of tears. And of course, tears are part of that grieving stage for such a long time, longer than anybody realizes. And I would just suddenly dissolve into tears, and I'd have to make myself a cup of tea or take a walk in the garden, do something to so that I could go back and continue writing. However, it was cathartic. I think when I finally finished the book, there were so many things that I had put into perspective. I didn't beat myself up so much anymore for the little things that you remember, the little things that stand out that you just wish you'd been a little bit more patient, a little more understanding, that you had made sure that you got the rest you needed so that you were, you know, able to do your best. There's something else I'm going to mention because it's very, very misunderstood, and I do talk about it in the book, and that is home hospice care. I bring it up because when you have a terminal illness and you fit the 5 criteria for being eligible for home hospice, it is a true gift. It is not end-of-life care. It is quality-of-life care because you get the benefit of having your loved one at home and having people come to you, therapists, a doctor, nurses, bathing aids. You get all of that help, and it's not for just the last few days of someone's life. Jeff was in home hospice care for a good almost 8 months because the care that he got was so good that we went off hospice care for a while and then went back in. So if it's understood that you can actually benefit and your health improve and your quality of life improve with hospice care, it's worth looking into.
And you're able to stay at home, which for a lot of people is very important.
It makes all the difference. I also, you know, was a caregiver for my mother during the last stages of her lymphoma. She passed away at the age of 93.
And, and you talk about that in the book, too. That happened around the same time that Jeff was getting diagnosed, right? I mean, that was a real toughie for you.
As a matter of fact, it was because I was taking care of my mother in Minneapolis, and Jeff was on his own in Los Angeles. When I came back for a few days, of just respite to take care of things in LA, that's when I really saw the deterioration. And it was during that period that he got into that car accident. So imagine the guilt that I was feeling about that. I mean, I was caring for my mother, but meanwhile, my husband was on his own, and I wasn't aware of just how serious things had got with him. So, you know, when I finished the book, I was able to put things into perspective. And a lot of these things, unless you do talk about it, or in my case, write about it, you do carry it inside. And I don't think it's healthy. You carry this burden of guilt or remorse, and it's best to take it out, look at it, and see it for what it is.
Well, I think this is why this book will help so many people, because a lot of people go through that experience of feeling guilty or feeling frustrated and letting it out, you know, in the wrong way, and then after the fact, all the things you're explaining, and they can read this book and see, you know, I'm not alone. You know,
absolutely. And really, this book is not just meant for people with movement disorder or specifically progressive supranuclear palsy. It's really for any caregiver who, whether it's a cancer, heart condition, whatever, where you are, Parkinson's, for heaven's sake, and there's so many people who are living with Parkinson's, which is treatable, by the way. There is a treatment protocol for Parkinson's. But it's really for everybody in a caregiving situation.
Yeah, well, that's what I said at the beginning. I don't think it should be limited to just the people with this particular illness. But on the other hand, for those who need a resource guide, that's also in there as an extra bonus for those who do.
Yeah.
And I know some of the proceeds from the book are going to help research for the...
Cure PSP, absolutely. It's a wonderful organization. And the interesting thing about Cure PSP is that so much of the research, and they're heavily devoting funds for research, what they are discovering... In researching this particular disease is also informing the sort of research they're doing into Alzheimer's and other brain disorder diseases. They're discovering, you know, all sorts of things about the, you know, tau protein, T-A-U, is responsible for the progression of this disease. So indeed, Cure PSP is doing wonderful work. And I'm a national I'm a volunteer spokesperson for the organization, but a wonderful friend of mine, Patricia Richardson, is the national spokesperson. Her father passed away from PSP in 2005, and she's done wonderful work on behalf of the organization, and I'm so pleased to be joining her. And the more that we raise awareness of the disease, the quicker I think we're going to find a cure.
Absolutely great work. You're doing so many good things in one book. So congratulations for that. And people can find out more about it. Your website, of course, has all the details, KatherineLeeScott.com. As always, we post the links to the website as well as the podcast when it becomes available. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Catherine. You're a font of so much. And thank you again for writing this book. I know it took a lot of courage to do it and put it into the world, and you're talking about it and championing it. So congratulations and thank you. The book is Last Dance at the Savoy, or Savoy, I guess is how you pronounce it, right? Hotel in England. Is that where?
Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. We're gonna post all those links for you. Hey, thank you, Catherine Lee Scott. I hope you come back and see us again. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Take care. Catherine Lee Scott, details at KatherineLeeScott.com, the book Last Dance at that Savoy. This is a different Savoy, but the fun one, too. Ella Fitzgerald on the Amy Beth Berkley Show with Louis Armstrong.
Savoy, the home of sweet romance. Savoy, it wins you at a glance. Savoy gives happy feet a chance to dance. Just like a clinging vine, your lips so warm and sweet as wine, your cheeks so soft and close to mine, divine. holiday. Savoy, where we can glide and sway. Savoy, there let me stomp away with you. Bo ba dee dee doo bo 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 dee 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 doo ba doo doo dee dee.
Satchmo stomping at the Savoy. Okay, they were talking about the same ballroom in New York, but I can feel that dancing going on between Kathryn Lee Scott and her late husband, Jeff Miller, at the Savoy in England. Last Dance at the Savoy is a great book, great read for caregivers and for everybody. It's really a Valentine of sorts. Find out more at KatherineLeeScott.com. We will post all the links for you to her website and, of course, the podcast when it becomes available later after the show. Don't forget, you can follow the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show on a number of places, including Stitcher, Mixcloud, and, of course, the Blog Talk Radio site. So reach out to us here if you're listening live or on the podcast, 347-857-4505 for the live listeners. Twitter feed, of course, is a 24-7 deal. At AB Writes, a couple of folks chiming in. Judy, very intriguing and knowledgeable conversation. Thank you. Well, you're welcome, and thank you to Kathryn Lee Scott, of course. And Bryn says, yeah, the book sounds fascinating. I'm glad you pointed out it's for more than just those suffering with that illness. Yeah, I think it's very important to point that out. There are resources for that particular ailment, PCP, but or PSP, rather, I'm sorry. But it is definitely a story about the challenges facing people as life changes and is upended with an illness, and how do you make it all work? And also you get the backstory, and they traveled a lot, so you get a lot of, you know, Elmo Leonard always said, like, scenery and things that people skip over. They call it hoop-de-doodle. She doesn't do too much of that, but any of the hoop-de-doodle she does is glamorous hoop-de-doodle. You know, it's nice to hang out in Venice for a little while rather than a dreary Missouri coal town, if you know what I mean. Just my take. Reach out with your Zabie Wright's phone line if you are listening live, 347-857-4505. And yeah, the Facebook page, Aurora Tells Us, is also open, so I'll have to take a gander at that and see what's happening. So let's get back to the sideshow. I know we had our little respite on Friday, which I thought was a great diversion with Richard Lynch and the Mostly Music show. Some people were thrilled with that. Other people said, hey, aren't you going to talk about what's going on? Well, we are. It's still going on. It never stops. It just gets crazier. So poor Ted Cruz. I mean, I never thought I'd feel sorry for Ted Cruz, but he has really wrung himself ragged trying to clinch this Indiana primary, which, according to polls, indicate he's not going to do so well. His first act of desperation was naming a running mate, should he possibly get that nomination, which is impossible unless he goes to a contested convention at this point. And it was Carly Fiorina. And you got to wonder, Carly Fiorina? I mean, the woman got 2% of the vote. Ted Cruz doesn't have a great likable personality, and then again, neither does Carly. So I don't know what's the point of pulling her in, but there we go. And then, of course, last week, former Speaker of the House John Boehner called Ted Cruz Lucifer in the flesh. So it was Carly joining Ted Doesn't Make It Devil with the blue dress.
It's only world famous because you won't shut up about it.
Wearing the blue dress. Okay, well. Okay, Trudy, we're doing real well, I can tell. Here we go. Got the right one now. That devil with the woman in the blue dress standing next to him. Reach out your views, Twitter feed, AV Wright, phone line 347-857-4505. It's another primary day.
Jump up! Get it! Hey!
Devil with the blue dress, blue dress, blue dress, devil with the blue dress on.
Ooh, yeah!
Bum, looking mighty now, here she comes. Wearing a wig, hat, and shades to match. Got her high-heeled shoes and an alligator hat. Wearing a pearl and a diamond ring. Got brains, but don't a thing of nine in every thing. Devil with a blue dress, blue dress on. She's the devil with a blue dress on. Lo, help her say. Got to be the finest girl alive. You walk real cool, catches everybody's eye. I got to be nervous, I can't say hi. Not too skinny, she's not too fat. She's a real punk singer and I like a mighty fat. Devil with a blue red, blue red song. She's the devil with a blue red song. Hey, I say now. I'm a call from the early, early morning to the early, early night. See Miss Molly rocking at the hop of tonight. Good gal and Miss Molly, you ain't sure like a ball. Oh yeah, rocking and you're rolling. Can't you hear your mama call? But on a finger now and everything. Devil with a blue dress, blue dress on. Oh, the devil with a blue dress on.
I love the devil with the blue dress. All right, gonna sock it to me now.
Devil with a blue dress on.
see the man that I've become. And to know I'll never see the morning sunshine on the land. I'll never see your smiling face or touch your hand. If just once more I could see you, our home and our little baby.
Get to torture them along the way. It's a fabulous system.
Presidential theme song. She's a must to avoid on the Amy Beth Arquise Show from Herman's Hermits. She got that song bequeathed to her by Michelle Bachmann, who picked it up from Sarah Palin. And yet, Ted Cruz has signed her on and his as his potential running mate should he somehow miraculously snag that Republican nomination. Not likely, but you never know, I guess, right? And Indiana Wants Me, or Dean Taylor, or Forgotten 45 for Val and Charisse, who writes in, that's the only Indiana song I think of, and it's a good one. Yeah, it is a good one, and I think we have one more. We were digging around the archive. I think we have one more song if we can play it a bit later. But, yeah, it's tough sometimes. We try to find songs that fit in with the primary days, and some are easier than others, as you well know. But Trudy and Aurora and the gang work on it, and that's what we came up with. Also, Devil in a Blue Dress from Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. Ted is the devil, according to John Boehner, and Carly could stand there in a blue dress. Although she didn't stand too well the other day, apparently. They were at an event, and she fell off the stage. I think she's okay, thank goodness. But, boy, Donald Trump, he never misses a beat. He played with this because he said that Ted Cruz didn't do anything to help her. I'm sure it happened very quickly, and I'm sure she was on her feet in no time. But Donald Trump made a big deal out of it, as he often does. He's running for bully-in-chief, whether we like it or not, and some people do, including some women. Yes, I know. Annalise sent me a tweet, said, don't broad-brush us. There are women who are for Trump. Yeah, I know there are. About 30% of the women, I guess, could be for Trump that don't have an unfavorable rating, although I think he's trying to inch his way from 70 to 100% in the unfavorable among women before he gets to the 1237. He might be able to make it. On the other hand, and I know my true blue no-matter-who folks get annoyed with me, particularly the Hillary people, when I say this, we underestimate Trump at our own peril. This guy has bamboozled a large swath of the American electorate, albeit mostly Republicans, but there are some independents, and he may be able to bamboozle some more. There was a guy on some radio host, I forget, John Phillips, is that the guy's name? I don't know where he was from. He was on CNN yesterday, and he said, well, Donald Trump is going to win over everybody. Don't worry about it, because all he has to do is prove that he's not Hitler, and he's not. Hillary has a tougher time because she has to prove that she's not Hillary, and she can't. So there are a lot of Hillary haters out there, too, and I don't think Bernie is helping the situation. He was for a while, kind of getting ready for the big wrap-up, which we all know is mathematically inevitable. He just doesn't have the delegates and the votes to swing the so-called superdelegates, or so-called. They are the superdelegates, but, you know, he was minimizing them. Now he's trying to make hay out of the fact that he does better in the polls in hypothetical matchups, which, you know, we talked about this before. Hate to burst your bubble, but hypothetical matchups, because Hillary also trounces Trump right now, that could change, and that's why I'm warning people. Hypothetical matchups right now in these polls mean squat. So, Bernie, yes, you do trounce Trump better, which, of course, is irrelevant because trouncing Trump by 15 or 12 doesn't matter. You still win. However, I don't know that it's going to be that easy to beat him. And I don't know what Bernie's up to. I mean, is he really working for that progressive agenda? I think it's fine. He should go all the way till June. Ted Cruz should go all the way to June. And John Kasich, if they want to, they should do it, you know, because until you really do clinch it, you don't have it. And I think Bernie is running on this progressive agenda and wants to push the Democrats into a more progressive stance. I think that's a good thing, if he does it right. If he's going to continue to harp on Hillary's faults, I don't think that's going to help come November. So if he really wants to prevent the Republicans, particularly Trump, from getting in there, then he's got to really work at that, I think, in a way. And I don't think it helps when his wife comes out and says, oh, Hillary was anointed, why don't they wrap up the FBI investigation, all of that kind of stuff, which, by the way, taken on its own face, that one comment, I wish they would wrap it up and put a declarative statement. It is not, there's no there. She's not going to be indicted, period. I don't know what the big holdup is. Let's just get to that. I don't think there is going to be an indictment, but they're kind of hoping there is, you know, that kind of thing. And, of course, Jane, like with Trump, it's deflection, projection. She has her own cloud hanging over her head, and she, you know, be careful what you wish for, Jane, because if he gets the nomination, you may wind up in jail. I mean, the whole issue that was going on with the bank fraud case up in Vermont is still nebulous. It's still alleged. I don't know if there's any. It's going to come to pass, but they probably will drop it and won't pursue it if he just goes back to being a senator. But they may pursue it, and certainly the Republicans will push for that because they'll look to tear down Bernie, and that's what I'm talking about. The polls are going to not swing necessarily in his favor when they look to tear him down the way they've been tearing Hillary down for 25-plus years. It's true. Just facts, people, just facts. But Trump, again, it gets baked in. You know, he's calling Hillary crooked Hillary, and you talk about projection here. It works, though, because it sticks in people's mind. And she does have this untrustworthy patina attached to her, and I'm not really sure why, just because they've been investigating her and smearing her for 20 years or more. But nothing has stuck. So I'm not so sure that there's any truth there. But it works as a soundbite. On the other hand, who's facing trial on both coasts this summer? Donald Trump, fraud trial. Now, yeah, there are civil cases because they couldn't make enough to leap to the criminality of it, I guess, or prosecutorial discretion played into it. But Trump is facing fraud charges on Trump University in both New York and California, class action cases against him because of all the money he bamboozled out of students for this bogus success university that he started, which is now defunct. And if you look back at his career, all the chicanery, I mean, he had a razor-thin avoidance of indictments a couple of times. He went bankrupt four times, or his companies went bankrupt, excuse me. There's a lot there that you can use, and the media chooses not to. They do in dribs and drabs. It's out there, and people could say, well, it's out there, people know about it, and they don't care. I mean, it really is true. The emperor is wearing a very flashy outfit, and nobody's telling him that there's, you know, that it looks ridiculous on him. You know? it's just, it's amazing to me. So I really go back to this idea, and I know I'm going to get darts from both anybody on the blue side, Bernie or Hillary, for any of these comments, because everybody is so prickly and entrenched in their own little cubbyhole. We have to look at it fairly, though. You can be for a candidate, but you have to look at his or her flaws, and you have to also look at what they're up against. And I don't think Donald Trump is going to be the cakewalk that a lot of people think he is in terms of winning. I don't care what the polls say right now. The polls didn't have him doing too well before the primary started either, and look who he ticked off, how he ticked off all these opponents. There's something going on that he's tapping into, and there are enough people, and they're not all idiots. I mean, we can't say they're all idiots and all jerks, who, for whatever reason, are willing to go along with him. They're willing to disregard the vulgarity. They're willing to disregard the over-excessive machismo. They're willing to disregard everything, the misogyny that is pouring out of his oozing out of every one of his pores. It has been for the last 30, 40 years. I mean, there's a documentation of all this, and yet there are people, including women, who are like, oh, so what? No big deal. It's just an act. I don't get it. So I'm saying we really have to be careful to take it for granted. And when they start talking about landslides and doing jigs, I say don't do that. Make sure people realize how close this is going to be and how important it is to vote. Because if you think it's a landslide, think about Michigan. Hillary had a 25-point lead in the primary against Bernie Sanders. Remember that? Bernie Sanders won by a thin margin, about 1.5-2%. How did that happen? Because Michigan is an open primary and people could switch over. And a lot of Democrats who assumed Hillary was going to win switched over to Republicans to vote for Trump because they think Trump is going to be easier. You know, they use this kind of strategy. And Hillary wound up losing. So if you're going to lose the landslide idea, a lot of people who will say, eh, I don't want to vote. It's a pain in the neck to vote. You got to park. You got to wait online. Eh, she's going to win anyway. So you don't want to plant that landslide seed because that's how she will wind up losing. And with the voter suppression that they're pushing and they're talking about it, that will hurt as well. People have got to get on the ID train. I mean, come on, get people. Minorities, seniors, students. The students is tricky because they try to lock you out from your get an absentee ballot if you're a student and you can't get home to vote in November on that date because they're trying to screw around. I remember when I was in college, you could vote just by coming in and having your temporary address as your address. But they really want to try to avoid people who are going to vote Democratic. And people have got to help minorities get the right photo ID. Instead of arguing about whether it's good to have it, just get the ID because you have the gosh darn ID, you can then vote. I mean, I think that's the solution in conjunction with fighting it out in the courts. But make sure people do it. But I don't want us to – I'm going to keep hammering this. We can't not be talking about this landslide business. I hope it happens. But we have to assume it's going to be a close race, and every vote counts, and everybody has to be encouraged to do that. So let's work towards that, and don't just laugh at him and say, oh, he's going to definitely lose, because he's got something going on he's tapped into, and he's working it, he's stoking it. And I don't get it myself. I abhor it. I don't want him on the scene. In fact, I think, you know, for a long time I said he would be easy to beat, but I think the tactics he's using are so dangerous and outrageous that he should be, this was early in the primary season, should be knocked off the stage. But now I think Cruz would be an easier person to beat. You know, the old expression, lose with Cruz, because he can't win in November either, but, I mean, maybe if he gins up enough conservatives, there are enough people out there who are so enthusiastic about it, that's the argument that the Democrats have. But I don't know. Because Trump is more, as Jimmy Carter said, malleable, because he doesn't really have a fixed ideology. And because his policies are for grabs, some people might think, well, we'll just go with him because he really is liberal, but he's also obnoxious and brash, and we want to shake things up. I don't know. There's just something about him that appeals to some people. I hope it's not enough people to get him over the edge, but it may be. So that's what I'm saying. We have to be careful. I'd love to hear your views. Twitter feed AB Writes, phone line 347-857-4505. Eric, for example, writes in, Trump is going to win Indiana, close down the show. Cruz and Kasich still hanging in, though. Yeah, they probably will. I mean, Kasich, everybody says, why is he still there? Well, he's still there because he's holding on to the scintilla of hope that by the time we get to Cleveland, people will come to their senses in the Republican Party. I just don't think that's going to happen because then other people think, well, you know, Trump got more votes, he should win. Again, this is a great lesson in how our Democratic Republic works. We don't have all, it's not really just the votes. Same thing we learned in 2000 with the hanging chads and Al Gore winning 500,000 more popular votes but losing the Electoral College. You know, so it's tough. On we go and what we learn as we go. Sometimes there are some tough lessons for sure, but Cleveland could erupt. So says Trump, but he doesn't want it to. Doesn't want any violence, but there could be violence, which I also think is irresponsible on his part. So a lot of his language, the incendiary comments he made during some of his rallies that had punched people out, they would carry people out in stretchers, all of this kind of stuff is dangerous, but it's ginning up a certain amount of that base that loves it. There is a frustration out there. There's an anger out there. And he's feeding into it and stoking it in ways that I find abhorrent, but apparently it works with some people, and I'm afraid it may work with a greater swath of the electorate than we're willing to admit. So you got to be vigilant, and you got to work at it. And Hillary Clinton certainly has to do her best, and Bernie Sanders should help. I mean, this is it, Bernie. You really want to, and he says it. He comes out and says that it would be horrible if Trump got elected, and yet he still goes on with this idea that it's going to be a contested convention, and you got to have the superdelegates. The reality is the math does not work for him. Back in 2008, President Obama could not have clinched the nomination without the superdelegates either. That's the system the Democratic Party has set up. You don't have to agree with it. You might want to change it. Maybe he'll work to change it for future elections, but it's the same thing when Trump complains about the different conventions and caucuses and how they apportion the delegates, et cetera. I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying that you have to play within that system, learn it, work it, and do it. And from Trump particularly, when he talks about the system being rigged, this is a man who for 40-plus years has worked within a rigged system, worked it to his advantage. Hello? It's crazy. It's outrageous to me. Your views, Twitter feed, AB Wright's phone line, 347-857-4505. And, of course, he's accusing Hillary of playing the woman card. That got her a couple of million bucks in donations, and they're passing out these pink women cards. The woman card gets you less money in your paycheck and all of these kinds of dubious things that women have to face. And, of course, you know, Hillary's tough. This is the one thing I will give her. The biggest thing to say about her is that she's tough. She's steely. I don't know if she's completely unflappable, but she's close to it. Trump is going to try to work her, but I think she can hang on and hold her own. That's for sure. And she said, well, if working for equal pay, equal rights, civil rights is playing the woman's card, well, then deal me in. I think that's the thing. A lot of women are jumping on that bandwagon, and it's true. So, you know, the audacity to say that if she weren't a woman, she would only get 5% of the vote, and the expression on the face of Chris Christie's wife the day he said that, which was last week at the end of the Acela victories, says it all. Think Chris Christie will be his VP? I think it's going to be Marco Rubio, actually, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how Marco cleans up his con man allegations when that happens. I'll tell you why I think that in a while. In the meantime, we got to do it. Just wanted to hear it, and I think it fits in. You know who I'm talking about. Helen Reddy. Mm-hmm.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend, 'cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor, no one's ever gonna keep me.
I'm not afraid to just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
Sunshine, even when I'm standing in the rain. Something happens that I can't explain when I hear your name, but you can't help it that you're always chasing rainbows in your mind. There's so much I want to say to you, and there's so little time. Hey, little woman, please make up your mind. You've got to come into my world and leave your world behind.
Those two go so well together, don't they? Bobby Sherman's sexist little, a little woman, and Helen Reddy, her anthem, I Am Woman, on the Amy Beth Arkwe Show. It looks like it's fixing to be a political version of Billie Jean King versus Bobby Riggs. Remember that tennis match back in the early 70s? I don't remember it too well, but it has that kind of feeling of the battle of the sexes out there. Billie Jean won, right? I think HRC will do the same, we hope, but take nothing for granted, and don't underestimate the con man that is Donald Trump. Twitter feed AB Wright, phone line 347-857-4505, should you be listening live on Tuesday, May 3rd. And we also have the Facebook page open, so says Aurora, and indeed we do. A couple of folks chime in here. Robert writing, Elizabeth Warren quoted, Trump feels threatened by Clinton's qualification to be president. You'll hear more from her like this in the general. Yeah, Elizabeth Warren, very important part of the progressive end of the Democratic Party. And Danny writes this really important long thing. I can't read the whole thing on Facebook, but he says, Democrats on the left need to reflect back upon 1968 and be mindful of what we must not again do to ourselves and to our country. Many of us remember well our cities already in flames following the assassinations of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and then Senator and presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy. These tragedies and the widening of the war in Vietnam were followed by the fracturing of the Democratic Party between the anti-war and anti-establishment populist candidate, Senator Eugene McCarthy, and the establishment candidate, the happy warrior, Vice President Hubert Humphrey. The violence that broke out during the 1968 Democratic convention brought the vote to Nixon, who, by the way, wasn't all that popular. I'm adding that part. But good point, Danny, and good point, Bernie Sanders. You got to get on board. I think it's time to start doing that. And I think he is doing it. And again, as I said, in all fairness, let him play it out as he wishes to do. But I'm just hoping and I'm imploring him and his supporters to think about it. Think about really the greater good. And again, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. You know, you don't get everything you want, and no candidate is perfect, including Bernie, in terms of getting things done. He's a good, big idea guy, and that's great. And I love how Trump wants him to run as an independent. Bernie's getting a raw deal, too. You know, I mean, Trump, for goodness sakes, he all of a sudden, again, as he worked the system for so many years, he's Abby Hoffman sticking it to the man. And people love it. You love that part of him, but do you know how much advantage he took of people along the way for the last 40-plus years, how he worked the system, how he paid off both sides of the political aisle? Think about that when you're casting your vote, those people who are in the Trumpian category. That's my view. What's yours? Reach out Twitter if you'd be right. Phone line 347-857-4505. So that's our Inspiration Action Challenge success story today. It is to Renee in Boulder, Colorado. She says, picking up a paintbrush again and journaling like crazy, it really is helping me. So thank you for doing that, getting me reconnected with my inner artist. Yeah, I'm glad it worked for you because that's what it can do if you stick with it. So if the Inspiration Action Challenge has worked for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out. Reach out to the website. It's amybetharkawy.com, easy access via the Twitter feed, and we will try to give you that shout-out. You deserve it. It helps nudge other folks on. And if you need some cajoling, you want to start a creativity coaching counseling conversation, I am ready for you. Just give me a week or two to connect. First one is always on me, and we'll get together. Hey, while you're at the website, don't forget to peruse my stories, the Eliza Gordon Mysteries, Killing Time, Dead Silent, and the new one, Murder, She Tweets, all available for ebook and paperback via Cozy Cat Press. Also details on the Cozy Cat Press group mystery, Chasing the Codex, all there at the website. Also, you can chime in with your guest suggestions, comments, and, of course, Forgotten 45s, if there's something you want to hear. Speaking of 45s, we have a new one for you. Actually, it's an old group with a new sound. Not really a new sound, an old sound, but a new song. The song was penned by Weezer frontman Rivers Cuomo, and the song is, well, She Makes Me Smile. The group, The Monkees. Yeah, unfortunately, Davy Jones has passed on, but Mickey Dolenz takes lead on this song, and listen to how young this 70-something-year-old sounds. It's the new music from The Monkees on the Amoeba 30.
I think I love you. didn't know how to deal with. And so I just decided to myself, I'd hide it to myself and never talk about it. And did not go and shout it when you walked into the room. I think I love you. Up against, I don't know what it's all about. I got so much to think about.
On the Amy Bibb Berkley Show, David Cassidy from the Partridge Family, of course. I think I love you. and the new music from the Monkees, which sound old but fresher. It's She Makes Me Laugh from their new upcoming album, Good Times, which will honor the 50th anniversary of the Monkees. Nikki Dolan, 70-something, sounding brand spanking new with his enthusiasm and perhaps a little help from auto-tune. Who knows? But they're going on tour again, apparently. And I guess, unfortunately, Davy Jones has passed on, but Mickey and Mike Nesmith and Peter Tork will, I guess, share the duties. Mostly Mickey, I guess, that's the lead singer now. Good stuff. If you like the Monkees, check it out. Great video they have, too, where they show the younger version of the Monkees in a comic book fashion with Davy Jones. Great homage to the late teen idol. Mm-hmm. Good stuff indeed. It is the end of the Berkeley Show. Hey, you know, we played the Coal Mine song for Brenda as a Forgotten 45, but also because Hillary Clinton, who made a comment during one of the CNN town halls a while ago about closing down coal mines and putting coal miners out of work, ouch, a doodle doo, she had to backtrack on that one, sat down with some coal miners, was it in Ohio or West Virginia, I'm not sure where, just the other day, and kind of explained to them what she meant. She meant was, we're going to create new jobs for you in the green economy. And, of course, it's hard to swallow, and she sat there with these folks, mostly guys, I think there was one or two women as well, and listened to them, which I think is one of her skills. And that's how she became senator from New York. She had her listening tour, and she took it real seriously and went all around the state, including upstate with the farmers and people that really weren't pro-Hillary or pro-Democrat. And a lot of them voted for her the first time. Many more of them voted for her the second time because she actually kept to her word and did a lot of things to help farmers. So I think she's going to do a lot to help the coal miners, too. She has plans. She doesn't just talk, you know, into the wilderness and spitting in the wind and all that stuff. I mean, she really does have some plans. And because she has those plans, she can sit down face-to-face with someone and explain it to them. So kudos to her for doing it, and kudos to those folks for listening to her and airing their views. And this is how you start winning votes. It's one person at a time. And this is why all these candidates deserve some credit, because it does take. And Donald Trump is always famous for saying this one's low energy or Hillary doesn't have the stamina. I don't know what he's talking about. There's no indication that she doesn't have the stamina, that's for sure, or for the matter that he doesn't or that any of them don't. And they're all older. They're in their 60s. Donald Trump is going to be 70. Ted Cruz is younger. He's in his 40s. But, you know, you have to have a lot of energy to do this, for sure. So I give him all credit for that. And she certainly is one to, you know, she's not the greatest campaigner, I guess. She's not a natural politician. She fully concedes this the way her husband, Bill Clinton, is, the way Barack Obama is, just the way she relates to people, I mean, I guess. But although in small settings, people who know her and people who have met her will say that she's very warm and comfortable in a very small setting, which is why she should do more town halls. She should do more one-on-one interviews. And she certainly should do what she does do, which is to go around and talk to people in small groups. She's better at it than she is in a bigger setting, I guess. And Trump always says she shouts. And maybe she does shout. They all shout. So does he. You know, and people take it as a sexist comment. I don't know whether it's sexist or just Trump trying to get under somebody's skin, which he does so well. And I hope she can remain unflappable. She says she will. She's going to talk about the issues. And there are surrogates out there, Elizabeth Warren among them, Bernie Sanders hopefully among them soon, and other people who can do some of her bidding for her as we go through this very long, arduous, it's going to be an ugly campaign. And I say get ready, people. Be prepared for it. And we got to mobilize the true blue, no matter who, people to get out there, not sit on their hands, but to vote, get their friends to vote, and to get the ideas you need to vote in states that are trying to make it harder. This is what I'm saying, because Donald Trump thinks he's going to win New York. I mean, he really believes that he's going to win states that Republicans always concede. And I hope that's not true, but we can't take it for granted. That's all I'm suggesting. So let's get to this crazy thing with Starbucks. This woman, I thought it was a class action suit. I guess it's a single suit. In Chicago, this person, Stacy Pincus, has filed a $5 million lawsuit over the amount of ice Starbucks put in its ice beverages. The complaint was filed in Northern Illinois Federal Court in Chicago last week. Pincus alleges that Starbucks customers are being misled because the company's ice drinks contain just over half the drink they are paying for. A Starbucks customer who orders a venti cold drink receives only 14 fluid ounces of that drink, just over half the advertised amount, and just over half the amount for which they are paying, so reads the complaint. I don't know if this is true or not. I mean, I think if you order an ice drink, and usually in the summer I'll order the iced tea more than the iced coffee. For some reason I don't like Starbucks iced coffee. I usually ask for extra ice. Sometimes they put in a lot of, if you put in too much ice, then you can always say you'll put in less. I mean, they are pretty accommodating that way, so I'm not so sure it's going to hold water, iced or otherwise. What do you think? Twitter feed, AV Wright, phone line 347-857-4505. Order it the way you want it. But order it. Here are the Arrogant Worms and the Coffee.
Young Derek would love to take my order.
Hi.
He works at the coffee shop just up the street.
Morning.
He's happy and annoying with a smirk the size of Texas. He's my coffee enemy.
Would you like a mochaccino? Or perhaps a cappuccino? Or maybe a frappuccino?
Says Derek wearing the chino.
All I really want is a cup of coffee. So strong the spoon stands up. Just a cup of coffee. All I really want is a cup of coffee. Give me a friggin' cup of coffee, Derek.
You should try our biscotti or a local cabbage cookie. This muffin's only $3.50, and what's super green is that it's fat-free. Don't want to smell like an espresso.
It helps
with your coffee scented soap.
Well, maybe you should have some chai tea. Or maybe join me in some Thai tea. Come on!
All I really want is a coffee in a non-biodegradable cup. Just a cup of coffee. All I really want is a cup of coffee. Give me a freaking cup of coffee. Oh, Derek, why won't you listen to me? I don't want a magazine or a CD. I don't want a latte or a frappe. I just want a coffee that doesn't taste crappy. All I really want is a cup of coffee. All I really want is a cup of coffee. All I really want is a cup of coffee. Give me a freaking cup of coffee. All I really want. All I really want. All I really want. Give me a freaking cup of coffee.
She keeps him away, Shondo, in a pretty cabinet. Listen, in case she says, just like Marie Antoinette.
Leisure, Forgotten 45, Killer Queen from Queen on the Amy Beth Arkoe Show. And that one, of course, a belated happy birthday to the Queen of England. And also happy first birthday yesterday to young Princess Charlotte. Mm-hmm, what adorable baby she is. So is her older brother, Prince George, who got a nod in President Obama's speech at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Did you catch that? Where he said, people around the world, the leaders are getting lax. Prince George showed up in his bathroom. Liked it. All right, Wilmore, not so much. Got bad reviews, but as Chris on Twitter says, he justified it on his own show. I missed it. I should have seen that yesterday where he tried to justify the fact that he used the N-word, which a lot of people were outraged about. I don't know. That's controversial in and of itself, but the act itself kind of fell flat. It's a tough room, that's for sure. I usually find him kind of amusing, at least a few times that I've seen him on the nightly show on Comedy Central. Check it out if you're so inclined. Hey, speaking of shows, did you see the Hall of Fame induction ceremony on HBO this week? And they played it, like, nonstop on one of the channels. I thought it was pretty good. I was a little disappointed because they had said that Steve Miller kind of went off on the Hall, and maybe he did, and they edited it out, or maybe he did backstage later because he was quite gracious during his speech, as they all were, and they played like crazy. And these guys are old, and they were all guys this year, too. He did mention that they should be more open to women. But it was a good show, and if you get HBO, they'll be playing it on and on and on, I'm sure. If you don't, look for it. I'm sure it'll be on DVD or on demand a bit later. So thanks again going out to Kathryn Lee Scott. KathrynLeeScott.com is the website. Find out more about her book, Last Dance at the Savoy. It is an important read, I think, and I will post all those deals for you on the Twitter feed and the podcast, too, when it becomes available. Don't forget, you can follow the Amy Beth Arkoe Show at the Blog Talk Radio site, also on Mixcloud. Download episodes at iTunes and NetNow, and all roads lead back to the website, AmyBethArkoe.com. Be on the listen for select editions on Arts Radio Network and PopNet. So there you go. We're ready to get out of here, I think, but never surrender. We'll leave you with one from Cheap Trick. They wrapped up the big concert night. We'll wrap it up for us today as well. Drive safe, play nice, dream big. Please come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arkoe Show. Thank you to the TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, and Mel at headquarters. Have a great day.